But Eastertide, it just keeps rolling along with this story about the disciples' encounter with the risen one. And just to put today's story into a time context, this happens on Easter Monday, so the day after the resurrection. And previously, Luke's gospel offers us a wonderful story about a couple who are traveling along the road to Emmaus with Jesus, and they share a Sunday meal with him. And how they initially didn't recognize Jesus, but then he was made known to them in the breaking of the bread. And just as rapidly as that couple recognized Jesus, he vanishes. And then that couple hurries back to Jerusalem. They find the disciples, they fill them in on what's been going on and share the good news that Jesus was indeed alive. So the disciples are there, they receive the news, and then Jesus appears to them. Now, I want you to imagine just for a moment, what would it be like if Jesus appeared to you? You know, in Luke's gospel, he tends to show up around mealtimes. So imagine you're preparing lunch and this guy appears physically, bodily. I mean, wouldn't you think it was a ghost or a spirit? I mean, even if he asked for a BLT, okay, he probably would not ask for a BLT since bacon is not kosher, but I would certainly assume that there was a spiritual presence. What Luke describes is a mystical encounter with the risen Christ. And most of us Protestants don't really like dealing with mystery very much because it's difficult to quantify, to observe, or to measure. But that doesn't mean it's not real. I don't know how many of us have had a mystical experience or sensed the presence of the risen Christ in our midst. But I'm aware, because I've spoken with some of you, that some of you have. For me, the most significant encounter I had involved a call to ordained ministry over 30 years ago. I remember I was sitting at our dining room table at our house in Boulder reading a book that was recommended to me by my mentor, Bruce McKenzie, who was senior minister at First Congregational in Boulder. And the book was a key work by John Dominic Crossan, and it was called Jesus, a Revolutionary Biography. It's a great title. And it's a book that actually stirred up a lot of public controversy. I mean, Dominic was on the Today Show, for heaven's sake, you know. It described a historical Jesus in ways that I think a lot of Christians never imagined him. And at the time, I still had my own communications business in Boulder, and I could sense that a change was on the horizon for me. So as I read, I had the distinct sense that there was actually a hand touching my shoulder. And I heard the words, "You can do this." I had a distinct sense that it was Jesus who was speaking to me. And that it was a life-changing experience, which is why I'm here with you this morning. For me, there was no visual encounter, just a touch and a voice. I had no sense that Jesus was physically present. I mean, he certainly didn't sit down and have a meal with me, and I was not in the company of other people who could vouch for my story. I'm certain that there were a lot of post-resurrection experiences that the disciples had individually of the risen Christ. But is it any wonder that Luke chose to describe two scenes at Emmaus and with the disciples in Jerusalem that involved Jesus appearing to several or a multitude of witnesses, and that both involved a meal, thereby proving they weren't experiencing a ghost, but rather one who was there in flesh, in a body, even eating with them. So among Jews in the first century, there are different ways of interpreting resurrection. I mean, not all Christians know that resurrection is a Jewish theory. It's a Jewish idea. And though there were different ways of interpreting it, for the Pharisees, it clearly involved a bodily resurrection. Classical Judaism understood resurrection as God's ultimate vindication of the righteous. Interestingly, Paul of Tarsus was a self-described Pharisee, presumably one who believed in the resurrection of the body. And yet Paul's flash of light experience on the road to Damascus was a forceful spiritual experience of Jesus that involved a voice and a flash of light, but no physical body. The plot thickens further in Paul's first letter to the church in Corinth. He writes, "So it is with the resurrection of the dead. What is sown is perishable. What is raised is imperishable. It's sown in a physical body, but it's raised in a spiritual body." He says that if there's a physical body, there's also a spiritual body. But wait just a minute. This sounds like something of a divergence or even a bit of waffling on a tenet of Pharisaic Judaism, that our physical bodies will be raised. But Paul was born and raised in Tarsus in modern-day Turkey, speaking Greek rather than speaking the Aramaic that Jesus spoke. So the culture that surrounded him meant that he was immersed in Greek philosophical assumptions, including the dualism of Plato, meaning that one's physical body and soul are separate entities, and that the soul survives and lives on after the death of a body. I was struck when you guys were singing this morning on the way in, it chills the body, but not the soul. So this is an idea that is still common in the West. I mean, how many of us think that there is both a body and a soul? Just by show of hands. No judgment here. But that idea was utterly foreign to the Judaism of Paul's day, which saw no division between body and soul. They were inseparable. In classical Judaism, resurrection of the dead was a central belief, essential to defining oneself as a Jew. Today, writes John Levinson, professor of Jewish studies at Harvard, that fact comes as a shock to most Jews and Christians alike. I really appreciate what the great preacher Fred Craddock has to say about the biblical witness to resurrection. He writes, "The resurrection was not an unambiguous event that could have been captured with a video camera, but it was a mysterious phenomenon that could have been interpreted more than one way and could evoke doubts and fear, as well as faith and joy." He writes, "The New Testament pictures the reality of resurrection in different ways that are not to be harmonized or blended. Each image brings out some theological meaning of resurrection, a divine mystery that cannot be captured in one representation." So that allows us plenty of latitude for interpretation. Yet the question arises after Easter, what will happen to us? I grew up in a family that was quite antiseptic about death and dying. No visitations, no viewings, no open caskets, no funerals, always a memorial service. And I don't recommend that viewpoint. So the first time I saw a dead body outside of an anatomy lab was when I was a Stephen minister in Boulder. I had been paired with Roy Bramel, a really lovely 95-year-old man who had been the founding dean of the School of Education at UConn, which has more than just great basketball. After Roy's death, I went to visitation with his family, and I looked at his lifeless body, and it was in a cardboard casket ready for cremation. And it was very clear to me that this was an empty shell. Yet at his memorial service, his adult children read selections from his voluminous writing about topics ranging from family to faith to patriotism. And as they read, tears began streaming down my cheeks. And for me, those tears flowed because the ideas and the emotions Roy's words expressed revivified him. That was Roy. His spirit was no longer attached to a body, but to the essence of who he was that continued on without interruption. I sense that this is true for all of us, that we continue to exist on a different plane or in a different realm. And I don't know whether we will experience an embodied resurrection or a spiritual resurrection or something entirely different. I'm not interested in ruling anything out in this great mystery with a capital M. I take it seriously that with God, all things are possible. I know what happens to our bodies when life ends. They degrade or they're cremated. And I know that we're not alone, but still are within God's love. I don't know what happens to the life force, to the spirit, to the soul, to the divine spark within us when life ends, but I know that we are not alone. God is with us each step of the way, within us, among us, and infinitely far beyond us. You know, God has brought us this far on the journey. So why would we imagine that God will not be with us beyond death? Why should we be surprised by anything that happens after death when every one of us is a firsthand witness to the miracle of life? Think about it. We are our self-aware, sentient beings, and we are sitting here on a Sunday morning because we know that there's something greater than we are, that there's more to life than can ever meet the eye. That is miraculous. That is mysterious. And miracles are everywhere if we take the time to listen and to look and to feel with our hearts as well as with our eyes and our ears. Resurrection is an incredibly powerful metaphor for us as we continue to live this life. It's a metaphor for new beginnings, for ultimate liberation, for ongoing presence of those whom we love, and for the continuing presence of Jesus in the world. So may we live as people whose lives are empowered and made beautiful by the presence of God. And may we be always on the lookout for mystery and everyday miracles, even at the breakfast table. Amen.